Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. We don't have a lot of time today, not in respect to the show, but in respect to the normal that we usually do. I'm not going to get into a long, drawn-out intro. We got a lot of people lined up. Not a lot of people, but we have important people lined up with important messages, so we just don't have a lot of time today. Today's show is going to center around the Baltimore ceasefire movement. It is a movement to stop the murders in Baltimore City. It has been successful for the past 33 hours and counting. There has not been one murder in the city of Baltimore in that time frame. And hopefully when we do our time hack, we're a little bit into the hour, it will be 34 hours in counting. But we will have one of the leaders of that movement, Miss Ellen G, to come on and talk about that and some other things. In addition to that, we're going to talk about the travel ban that the NAACP issued for the state of Missouri. That is obviously huge news, and we are fortunate enough to have the president of the Missouri chapter of the NAACP to come on and chime in and chat with us a little bit later. Good morning, Rashi. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. How is you? How are you and yours?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Now, I'm going to actually do what I can to invite Ellen. Let me see if I can get this right. You know, this is, she asked for us to call her, so I'm going to do my absolute darndest to get her on. But as I said, we have the president of the Missouri chapter of the NAACP coming on later. I know that's near and dear to your heart, as you are a Missouri resident. And I know you've already chatted with the gentleman, which makes it even better for us. And as I informed him yesterday, I was like, you know, we're putting on a full-court press with you, sir, because, you know, you were on with him doing an interview early in the day. Then I was tweeting around the universe trying to get a hold of him, and he finally hit us back later on in the afternoon. So that worked out rather well. Teamwork makes the dream work, so we were able to pull that off. And I'm trying to get Ellen on
Let me see. Okay. Nope, that's not going to work. Let me see.
Yeah, I was informing the brother Nimrod Chapel Jr. that he's gonna be. He was just telling me that he hasn't been able to really rest or anything since he put that notice out. And I told him, no, people, arsonists who start fires rarely get a lot of rest while the fire still burns. So he seems very interested in getting the information out so that it doesn't get sensationalized with any news that's important. With any news that's important, people grab hold of it and they use it, maybe not to inform, but to scare or to just for like backlash. They use it as something just to backlash against. So he's trying to make sure that as much information is put out so that he's not seen as some sensationalist politician trying to make a name for himself, because he already has a name.
Right. What got me was the retort, if you will, from St. Louis. I mean, that thing to me seemed totally out of sorts and unnecessary. If you had concerns about your folks, for your folks, that's fine. But there's other ways to voice it. And that really threw me, as I'm pretty sure it threw him. Because,
well, let me tell you,
that wasn't cool.
If you look at the, I'm a comment reader, which is really saying a lot about me. I'm sad to admit that. It's like, hi, my name is Rashid, and I read comments. But if you go and look into the comments surrounding this subject, you get, there's no middle ground. Either you absolutely agree that we live in a modern day war zone, or you totally disagree and you're like, what the hell is he talking about? Nobody can say, I can see how he feels that way in cities like St. Louis or Kansas City St. Charles down there. Cape Girardeau. Down there towards the south, there is another major city by the Ozarks. Crime and policing and profiling and all that kind of stuff is going down mostly where we are. So what he's trying to get people to hear, he didn't want to say St. Louis is bad or Kansas City is bad. What he's trying to get people to listen to is that the state, the entire state, is in flux. And depending on where you are, it's the difference between being killed by your own fellow black person, getting killed by a policeman who's supposed to be policing those black people, or if you travel to the rural areas, the actual citizens, the white citizens, can kill you. You know, it's just the whole thing together. After he crunched the numbers, and there were number crunch, That's what I want people to hear. This is not something he pulled literally out of his ass. There were numbers. There was statistical analysis done, you know?
Unlike the state senator who proposed the legislation, SB 43, and he couldn't back up that, which is on the other side of it. All right, I got Ellen now. Good morning, ma'am. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Vaughn. How you doing?
Outstanding. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Can hear you
fine. I'm good. Okay.
Good morning. It's so nice to meet you. I know. That's
Hi.
Why you was raised by wolves. Good morning, I'm Rashi. I'm so glad to speak with you. I've been crawling through your Facebook page all morning.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Absolutely. So this is the 11 o'clock hour, and are we at 34 hours murder free?
We are. We absolutely are.
That's what's up.
Yay!
That's what's up.
Congratulations.
That's what's up. Now, please tell us about the Baltimore Ceasefire Movement and why you felt like it was a necessary step to take.
So Baltimore Ceasefire is so let me back up by that the ceasefire is not a new idea. So calling for a ceasefire is we've been calling for ceasefires at various times in history in this city and in this country and in America, period. So, and I'm moving while I'm feeding, so if you hear background noise, that's what's happening. Back in May. No, I'm moving about.
I'm
en route to go somewhere. Yeah, no, I'm not going to
move. I got you.
So back in May, Erica Bridgeford had a conversation with her son, and in the conversation that she had with her son, they realized that the murder rate in Baltimore was climbing in a way that was going to set a pace to put us at close to 400 murders at the end of the year. About 2 years ago, when Ooh passed away, Erica and Ogun Gordy had a conversation about calling a ceasefire back then. But, you know, the stars didn't align appropriately, and so they weren't able to link up. And this year in May, their energies collided. The conversation that Erica had with her son, they spoke and they said, now is the time. It's time for us to do this now. We can't keep putting it off. Baltimore is going to hit 400 if we don't do something. So Erica got on the phone and started using all of her resources. She is very well respected and admired in Baltimore City. And usually when she calls people to do something, because we know the quality of her work and the integrity of her person, the answer is yes. Sometimes she can't even get the whole question out. Can I? Yes. Can you? Yes. So we had some public meetings to kind of think about what we wanted it to look like, because while Erica and Ogun planted the seed, it was up to the community to water the seed and to help it to grow. And that's what you've been seeing happening. So you've seen Baltimore City step up in a way where we called a ceasefire. We decided for ourselves that we weren't going to leave it up to the mayor or the police commissioner or that anybody, the Baltimore City Police, nobody. We're not leaving it up to anybody to save us. We are deciding to save ourselves. And so we planned ahead. We said we're going to shoot for the first weekend in August. There was a lot of criticism behind that. People were saying, well, people are dying now. Like, why aren't you doing anything now? And one of our answers to that question was there are 630,000 people in Baltimore City. If on May the 9th we said that we wanted to have a ceasefire that weekend in May, what, 25 people would have knew about it? And so it wouldn't have been able to accomplish that goal. So we spent that time from May the 9th through yesterday hitting the streets, hitting social media, talking to people, having conversations with people and asking them, are you willing to take the peace challenge the first weekend in August? Are you willing to call a ceasefire for the city the first weekend in August? Obviously, we had a lot of a variety of responses to that. People said, I mean, I can do it, but I don't think it's going to work. And our reply to them was, as long as you do it. Like, you're not responsible for anybody else in the city besides you and your people. So can you keep you and your people safe? And they answered the question, yes. We talked to people, and people were like, yes, we absolutely need to do this. Thank you for putting this out there. And while I am not confident that all 630,000 residents in Baltimore City know about it, enough people know about it that – we didn't have any murders in our city yesterday. And we're going on, I think it's 33 hours where we haven't had any murders in the city.
No, it should be 34.
34 hours.
Yeah, the time hack at 10 o'clock was 33, correct.
Yeah, so 34 hours, and we haven't had any murders in our city. People are celebrating. They are lifting Baltimore in love. There are peace walks. There are meditation circles. There are Reiki energy circles. So everything is happening in the city to steady the air and to steady the energy in Baltimore so that we can keep up the momentum through Sunday.
Yes. You're absolutely right, Ellen. The statement goes, we are the ones that we've been waiting for. You know,
absolutely.
You cannot have anyone else bring peace. It has to come from within, and it has to be. It only really doesn't have to involve both parties. If two people are funking, and one of them says, "I'm choosing peace." The other one almost has no choice but to choose peace. Violence and crime, it has to have two people. It has to have multiple people in order for it to happen. And if even one, like you say, don't worry about them. You choose peace. I think what you have done here is just short of, and I hate to be crass, miraculous.
It is miraculous. It is miraculous, and Baltimore City had the audacity to hope that we could do something different. And I've been saying to people over and over and over again, don't ever let anybody tell you what you can't do. People have been telling Baltimore for a very long time about who we were. People have exalted the wire and given us, and while that is an aspect, Baltimore in its totality. That is not all of Baltimore. Baltimore is a city that's filled with grit and determination and perseverance, and we operate from a place where of love and respect. Like, I really feel like a lot of the internal struggle with people who are committing these acts of violence and are being violent towards each other are a reflection of our desperate need to have and feel like we are respected. We need to feel powerless, and we haven't figured out for ourselves how to do that without being violent. Because America as a country is inherently violent.
It's violent.
It started violently. And I said to someone the other day that the behavior that you see for a lot of the citizens in America, to me, is a reflection of America's parenting of its citizens. So the same way they say in the Bible, train up a child, America has been training its children to be violent. America has been training its children to glorifies bullying, and look at the way that we treat the rest of the world. To me, it's kind of one of those things where chickens are coming home. We are showing what our quote unquote parents taught us.
Yeah.
So I don't keep.
I believe the lesson goes, Ellen. It goes, do as I say, not as I do. That's what.
Right.
That's
but
the
how many children?
They want.
How many children do we know that? You know, you have parents out here that are doing things that are harmful, and they're not watching them and doing the exact opposite. You run. It's a gamble when you're not doing the right thing and you expect your children to do the right thing. Like, that's not how life works.
I want to ask you, Ellen, have any other cities like Chicago or St. Louis or Miami, have any of those cities reached out to you to see what your operation procedure was in order to mimic it?
So we actually have, I think that people were waiting to see results first. So thank you. People have been adding on social media, like, we want to see how you did what you did. We want to find out, you know, if it's successful. At least want to know what your model was, because places like Chicago, places like Detroit, places like Oakland, and all the different major metropolitan cities across the United States, in my opinion, deserve the same kind of healing that Baltimore was able to grant itself. And I honestly don't think that the people who are out here killing people are getting a kick out of killing. I don't think that they understand exactly what it is that they're doing, not the gravity of it. Erica had said in an interview very early on that while we focus on the fact that once every 19 hours somebody lost their life in Baltimore City, once every 19 hours somebody experienced what it was like to take another person's life. So while they changed a family, they also changed themselves. And to yeah. think about how that act dehumanizes a person and how they have to change themselves and either go numb, self-medicate, or disassociate themselves from that act so that the gravity of it doesn't weigh on them is a whole nother conversation that we need to have. Community instead of looking at these people like they're monsters. Because while yeah. what they did was heinous and horrendous, they have to live with it. And I don't know a lot of people who don't regret it immediately after it happens.
Yeah. The term for that psychologically is called cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance. You know what's going down, yet you choose not to deal with it within your own personal thoughts. And
right.
there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that going around. Like you said, when your parent is as abusive as this country can be, you have to grow a sense of cognitive dissonance in order to survive. You have
yeah.
to. Some of that stuff has to be water off your back just so you don't. So you don't go insane. And I thank you for what you have brought is sanity. I know it sounds far-fetched, perhaps, but what the initiative has, not you, but you and your cohorts and your team and those who are participating have brought moments of sanity and clarity instead of just instinct, animalistic behavior. You've brought it back.
Right.
And if you don't have the key to the city, in a little while, I'm personally going to start a letter writing campaign.
So I was just doing what I was told. I honestly feel like Baltimore City deserves a key for itself. So the residents of Baltimore City are the ones who deserve, because the six of us, the six people who were on the organizing squad, there is absolutely no way that we could have pulled this off by ourselves. We couldn't have canvassed the city. We couldn't, Erica Bridgeford, Ogun Gordy, Jakia Jason, Michelle Shellers, and Darnell Wharton. We could not have done
Thank
this
you.
By ourselves. It is the citizens of Baltimore City who got out in the streets and pushed this message and posted flyers and talk to their people and organize events. So if anybody deserves a key to the city, it's the citizens of Baltimore themselves, because they did it. We didn't do it by ourselves.
Ellen, I want to jump in because, first off, I want to thank you for your time. You know, I asked you for
You're
five
welcome.
Minutes, and you've given graciously much more than that, and I appreciate that. But I needed to reach out to somebody this morning to ensure that we highlighted this, because as you said, this is problematic, and this has been problematic not only for Baltimore City, but throughout our nation. There was
right.
a video posted just yesterday that I forwarded about David Banner and how David Banner was talking about the socialization or lack thereof of America. And he spoke directly to the relationship between black folks and the slave owners and how we behave based off of what we were taught and how we were trained. And I give a lot of credence to that. I don't give full credence to it because I think everyone has the ability to eventually get out of that cycle if they so choose. But a lot of people don't see a choice. So I understand that as well. But this time around, the folks were given a choice. the folks made a choice, and that choice is resonating not only locally, but as you said, globally. I've been following you all. I've been following the coverage that you all have been getting. I agree with you that the citizens of Baltimore City deserve the applause, the accolades, in addition to those whom formed up and stepped forward to lead that charge. So I want to thank you. I want to thank Erica and the other four folks on the team who put this thing together. E Wonder, we love you. We appreciate you. This is an awesome thing, and we hope that we don't stop at 34 hours. We hope that we roll through and meet our goal and then exceed our goal by getting folks to understand that there's another way. There's another way.
Yes. And for the people who are listening, if you're interested in continuing or finding out more information about how we can keep this effort going, on Monday, August the 7th, Ceasefire 365 begins. We have an interest meeting for the community at 5:30 p.m. at 3333 Greenmount Avenue. And we're going to talk about what happened during the ceasefire, talk about what was successful, things that we could have done differently, and figure out a way to make it so that Baltimore doesn't experience any murders in the city all year long.
Whoa.
Now, that's what's up. One of the things is keep them folks from down on Holiday Street in their damn offices and off the streets because they tend to fuck shit up versus helping it. But that's a different story for a different time. Thank you, sis. Love you.
Thank you very much. Love you, back. I'll talk to you later. Y'all have a good day.
All right, baby.
Go be
all right, now, peace.
Go be more. Go be more. Yep.
Wow. Now, that is the way you open up the show. That's the way that it's supposed to be done. You got a great story, right timing, right people, right place, boom. Hence, the next guest that we're supposed to have, and President Shape should be calling them pretty soon.
Capel.
You know what? I've been fighting with that, like, all the time, because here's my thug thing. I'm a dookie, and we had two capels, right? We had one capel, Jeff, and then, you know, the brother. I don't even talk about him because he went to that other damn school. And every time I see capel, I think of capel. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, how do I say the brother's name? And then on the PBS interview that I read and listened to, it wasn't Nimrod, it was Rod. So I'm like, okay. Let me fall back, shut up, and just say Mr. President and just keep it neutral because I'm not trying to mess this up at all. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Brother Nimrod Chapel.
There you go, Brother Nimrod Chapel. There you go. I'm like, because I'm not trying to get tongue-tied, tongue-twisted, or nothing else when the president comes on and does his thing and talks about his thing. Speaking of which, shouts out yesterday to President Barack Obama. It was his birthday. There were a lot of things, Mr. President, that you did for the country. There were a number of things, Mr. President, that you did not do for black people. So, you know, while I applaud you, I hold your ass accountable because a lot of things that we're going through right now could have been softened had you stepped up. But before you were elected, sir, you were selected. So I understand. You know what I'm saying? I think you hit your stride a little too late. It was there for you to hit in the beginning, and I think you missed it trying to be too cautious. On a number of things. You know, I was talking to somebody earlier today about the fact that I don't credit my degree because the university that I went to, it lost its accreditation. It lost its accreditation because of the financial crisis, and when the Obama administration came into power, they didn't understand the need of Pell Grants and other resources that HBCUs needed in order to survive. My college was one of those casualties of that war, and they never rebounded. By the time the administration caught up to the reality, they tried to make change, and they did, but the smaller schools were too far gone, and a number of them were forced to shutter their doors. Mine just happened to be one of those casualties. And it's okay. You know what I'm saying? I put in a lot of long hours, a lot of long days. I worked a job like a Hebrew slave, took 6 classes at a time. But it's okay. I can do it all over again, you know what I'm saying, in order to make sure that I'm aligned with what is quote-unquote necessary in order to be successful in this world. I've done okay for myself ever since then, even before then, so I'll continue to do the same. But it does suck the big kabuki that I do have to start from ground zero. However, these are some of the missteps of folk make when they come into power and they don't understand everything that's going on. However, our president from Missouri has not and will not make those type of errors, and so we grant him a good morning this morning. Mr. President, how are you, sir?
Good morning. Thank you.
Yay, good morning, sir. Good morning.
That voice you should recognize, that's Sister Rashi.
I'm sorry. I'm a bit overwhelmed. I'm sorry. That's all. I'm feeling like Roland Martin right now.
Amen. Well, and I'm feeling like a guest on his show. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, that's what's up. Now, you just talked about me before you came, but I don't know if you heard me or not. So I'm
sorry,
I'm a little nervous.
Lee, I'm sorry, sir. Your phone is not behaving quite well. All right. I'll go
okay.
To you. Yeah, okay, that's much better.
I was feeling a little nervous because the EPFP that I saw on you referred to you as Rod, but I referred to you as Rod. And then the last name is Chad. But every time I see it, I think I'm a Duke basketball fanatic. So I think about the Duke brothers. So I'm like, I don't want to mispronounce his name. I'm nervous. I don't want to mess this up. So I'm going to just refer to the fine gentleman as the president. Then we'll just go to the board.
Brother Lee, perhaps if you're on speaker, you could take it off because I'm afraid we didn't hear much. But Brother Chapel, what he was talking about was not being so nervous to want to say your name correctly. Would you mind telling us one or two things about yourself before we get into the meat of the ordinance?
Oh, I'd love to. My name is Nimrod Chapel Jr. I'm a trial attorney from Missouri. Originally raised in Oklahoma, but have been in Missouri since the 90s. I have a great affection for the NAACP. My family's been involved in civil rights work since actually picking cotton to fund the litigation that became Brown versus the board. At this point, I represent people 99% of the time who've been injured, cheated, or mistreated. My work with the NAACP has allowed me to have a positive, I would think, influence on some of the policy decisions that are trying to be reviewed in the state of Missouri, and do that in conjunction with all of the NAACP units in the state. It's been an incredible opportunity for me, and I hope that things are moving forward.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons we brought you here, because we're going to have to beg you back, because we have more – we have pressing business to talk about with that Senate Bill 43, but we brought you here today because you have set the internet literally on fire with your article about the state of affairs in the state of Missouri as far as it comes to living, traveling, purchasing items, and just being alive in the state of Missouri. You have put out there that perhaps Missouri is not the best place to kind of frolic right now. Can you expound on that?
Absolutely. You know, we at the NAACP have been reviewing civil rights violations based on individual complaints and based on statistical data that we've collected around the state. Almost 16 years ago, the NAACP worked very hard to ensure that Missouri would be one of the premier states that collected data about vehicle stops, because driving while black was known to be an issue even then. And Governor Mel Carnahan, with his insight, put that into law, and we've been collecting that data. And this is just one example of how things in Missouri have gotten worse. Today, last year's data was, excuse me, last year's data has been released. So if we looked at that today on the State of Missouri Attorney General website, where they collect it and put it out for public dissemination, we would see that the number of people who are being stopped, who are people of color, has increased, and that it's been increasing for years. That at this point, it's 75% more likely to be stopped if you're a person of color than if you were a Caucasian person.
Whoa. 75%?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whoa.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So, they're stopping us. So that's as far as the police are concerned. There's an alarming increase in the amount of just interaction Black people are getting with the police, 75% more than white. Or is there something else that we're drawing this on? Is there another phenomenon that's happening in the state that you feel like should be brought to forth?
Absolutely. The other thing is that we've seen individuals who have been targeted or who have been assaulted through racist or discriminatory conduct, such as Tori Sanford, who got lost in Tennessee, accidentally drove up to Missouri, just literally went the wrong direction, but ran out of gas around a little small town called Charleston, Missouri. That area of the Boot Hill has a long and storied legacy, in which Mr. Tori Sanford is just the most recent victim. He did not go to jail. Let me say this better. He was not arrested, but they took him to jail without him having committed any crime. And he was not allowed to leave. And by the time that he did leave, they took him 45 minutes away to Sykeston, where he was pronounced dead. All that happened in one day. Literally, at one moment, he was calling his mom saying, "I'm out of gas. What do I do?" He suffered from depression. He had some mental illness in that way. And his mom said, "Go find a police officer. They'll help you." He found police officers, but they did not help at all. At one point, he called his mom from the jail and said, "Mom, they're trying to kill me. They're electrocuting me." And at that time, it's my understanding that one of the jailers took the phone and told his mom, "No, we're helping him." I believe that was the last time she ever talked to her son.
Huh. Okay, so, I'm sorry. I just got the chills.
It's okay.
Astounding. It's astounding what is allowed to call, we call justice in this country, especially this state. And I just want people to know you're not being a sensationalist. I want people to know that you are not just drumming up some kind of press drive so that you can get elected to some unknown seat. You are actually trying to do the work that the president of the NAACP is supposed to do, which is protect the civil liberties and rights of African Americans and people of color in this United States. And so I like to be clear about that, because there's a lot of news out there that's not real. And I want people to know that this, you don't get more real than this, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. And I really appreciate that, because, you know, it's sad, but we looked at a couple of the murders that happened around the Kansas City metropolitan area. Those, the two Indian fellows who were shot at, and the one Caucasian brother that also got shot trying to save them. You think about the Christians that were mistaken for Jews, and they were also shot at outside of Kansas City. And somebody pointed out, hey, that's over the state line. For us in the NAACP, and particularly in Missouri, that's the Kansas City metropolitan area. And so when we think about Kansas City, when we think about St. Louis, it's not going to stop on one block. But all of these issues that we talked about in the travel advisory, and most of the ones that I'm sure we'll talk about this morning, have not only been reported by the NAACP, but they've also been reported by the media. These are some stories have had greater or lesser coverage depending on the significance that those outlets have placed on it. But, you know, like the children in St. Louis who had hot glue placed on them while they were being called names, you know, these are things that are happening to real people, and I really appreciate you bringing attention to them.
I'm going to jump back in. Can you hear me better now? I changed my headset. Is that better?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Outstanding. All right, cool. So State Bill 43.
Yes.
Now, this thing is recently signed into law, and
mm-hmm.
it ups the ante as far as the standards to prove discrimination.
Yes.
It also gives immunity to those who are who discriminate or harass other people. How did this thing
That's
even
right.
get off the ground?
You know, and it's frightening. We've had the business community, the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, has for years tried to find a way to keep businesses from being sued for poor employment practices, those being where you go to work and you're hit with a barrage of derogatory comments based on your race, your age, your religion, your international status, your disability, or perception as such. And so over the last several years, they've been working and working to try to find a piece of legislation to do that. Now, typically, they would suggest something that would increase the standard, that would eliminate whistleblower protections, that would require employees to submit to arbitration agreements. All those bad ideas have been proposed before. This year, one of the legislators, a senator named Gary Romine, had been sued. He'd been sued because in his rent-to-own store down there in the Boot Hill, not far from the Charleston area where Tori Sanford died, by the way, they were using the N-word like it was a Christmas greeting. They were passing that out to the employees, and then inside the store they were refusing to rent to people of color. Those are the allegations that were made in the lawsuit, which is, you know, it's a public document. And so Gary Romines then introduces this piece of legislation that is the most restrictive, most similar to Jim Crow that I've seen. No other jurisdiction that I've looked at, and I searched with the help of other people who we tried to find it and see if it was something happening nationally. But it gives immunity to individuals for their discriminatory and harassing conduct. It increases the standard to the motivating factor. That's a higher standard than we've been able to locate in any other jurisdiction. So we went from a state that had good laws that allowed for the protection of individuals in employment cases where you had to show that your race, your sex, your disability was a contributing factor. That is, that it was among the things that was considered. So if you've got two people up for discipline and they say, I know that old disabled Bob over there is late just like non-disabled John, disabled Bob, you're terminated, right? So the jury could consider mm-hmm. that and they could make up their instead, we have the motivating factor, which is the standard now. Many are afraid that you will literally have to have a memo from the company saying we terminated Bob because he's disabled and we'd do it again in order for that to be
impossible.
Able to be shown to be the
issue. That's impossible. They would never
yes,
they
that's
say
right.
that.
Well,
no,
I love it.
No self-respect. You won't even find a letter from an individual telling another individual, I hate you because it's hard to find that.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Now, I enjoyed the fact, again, I was listening to and I followed up with the PBS article. I was enjoying the fact that you made the argument between and the and how you phrased it. Like, that was just brilliant, honestly. I know you're a lawyer. Are you a defense attorney or a prosecutor?
No. So I represent most people in civil court. I do some criminal defense. You know, I typically take on cases where I really believe that there's an injustice going on. It's not the main bulk of my work, but I do some.
Gotcha. Yeah, because, I mean, that was some Law and Order type stuff that I was reading. I was like, I was like, Johnny Carson came back to life and reincarnated himself. Because I felt it. I was like, I'm sitting in that jury box like, you know, but
Brother Chapel, are you the brother I need to talk to about getting my reparations?
Oh, he can win.
All right, but seriously, so okay, so the law goes into effect, it takes hold. Now, your state already has a Human Rights Act that isn't the strongest because it doesn't cover sexual orientation as it stands right now, correct?
That's an excellent point. Yes, that's right. That's right. And we've tried to have that amended in different ways. But, you know, in the House of Representatives, to this year, Rick Britton, a young House of Representatives member, said that he didn't recognize homosexuals as human beings. You know, and for us,
really?
That may sound familiar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used to say the same thing about people of color, that we weren't human like everybody else.
Used to. That's a common operating. That's an operating theory right now. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk solutions, brother, because I'm about to start crying from the sure seriousness of it. Let's talk some solutions. Where can we start?
You know, one thing that I think everybody should do is take care of themselves. Just automatically for the first thing. Be aware of what you're coming into. So if you're coming to Missouri, you know what you got. If you're going to the Boot Hill, know what's happening over there. If you're in and around some of these other cities where terrible things have occurred, be aware. If you're a person of color, know what can happen when you're driving on the streets based on statistical data. So let's start there. Then I think the larger conversation, you know, from the macro to the micro would be that we as a society, we people in Missouri and we as a country have to decide whether we're going to value some people more in the law than we do others, that we're going to give immunity to people who harass and discriminate against others or not. That law needs to be repealed. It's unconscionable, immoral. For most people, it's a sin in their faith belief. We need to start there. Once we go past that part, the other question is, what kind of systemic solutions are there? You know, and I'll tell you, you know, I practice law. You know, I like policy. I like public issues. But there are people out there who have spent a lifetime studying the science and the beliefs and attitudes, the psychology behind why it is people stop other people based on their color, why this is happening, and the best way to solve that. But we need to bring that kind of experience and education to bear on the issue as quickly as possible in Missouri to eliminate that, to ensure that all people are treated equally on the roadways. Likewise, we've got criminal laws that prevent mistreatment of people based on God-given characteristics like color and sex and even religion and disability. If there are hate crimes that are taking place, prosecutors need to be held accountable. They need to take their oath just as seriously to the least of us as they do to everyone else. So if there's a murder that needs to be prosecuted, prosecute it. But if there's a murder that occurs at the same time that an individual is being, run over with racial epithets, that needs to be prosecuted too. Hate crimes have to be recognized and prosecuted. But it's those kinds of solutions that I think that we need to start looking at.
I don't want to give the impression that we're rapping because we're not. Rashi might want to get the solutions. I want to kick up some more dust. So the law also limits back pay damages and penalties for so I'm wronged, but you as business get to dictate to what degree I'm wronged.
There you go.
You know, like, really? When do you become the juror, the judge, and the defendant? So you're the defendant, you're the judge, and you're the jury. And all I'm doing is sitting here. Well, why don't I wait outside and y'all can work it out, and then I come back in, and then y'all holler at me.
Matter of fact,
this is a waste of my time.
Yeah, you don't even need to come. Right.
Y'all can text me. You know what I'm saying? Just hit me on the Instagram. You know what I'm saying? Why was I here?
Yeah.
The $10 fee, you know?
That's the reality. That is the reality. And I'm going to come back to that in a different way, too, though. Because, you know, what we see is the Chamber of Commerce is literally taking over the thought process of a large member of our legislative branch. The idea that Missouri is doing bad financially has allowed people to in some way try to articulate this as a pro-business bill. This is not pro-business. Businesses do not want to discriminate against other people. I don't believe that fundamentally. They don't want to be sued either. But good businesses make sure that they have a process in place that when they find these issues, they take care of them. Instead, this bill, it limits front pay. Have you ever heard of that? So you're at work. Somebody mistreats you. You get fired because you complain about it. All that can happen under the new law. And you won't have an adequate way to complain about it. And then the other part of it is that if you do, you go to court, you don't get to sue the person that did it to you. You sue the business. So you're suing the business. You go there and you say, hey, they fired me after I complained about being discriminated against. That's discrimination and retaliation. It ain't right. And the jury agrees with you because you had that memo that said we did it on purpose. Even at that point, the ability of that individual to receive compensation for issues going forward, like for that next month's pay after he got fired, for that next year if it took him that long to find a job, the jury ought to be able to consider that as a damage. New law, they can't. That's more restrictive than most places in the United States. We heard over and over again from the Chamber of Commerce, and I think that they just flat out misinformed our Governor Greitens, that this is joining the federal standard, that we're joining 38 other states with their legislative standard. That's false. That the level of proof is higher than those other states. The immunity given to individuals that can discriminate against other people on protected categories is not included in those other states, and neither is front pay or the exclusion of front pay from the calculation of damages. So it's terrible. It really is. Now, because we were talking about why am I even here? That's one of the issues that's alive in Missouri. The ability of black people, people of color, to participate on juries has been recognized by courts as being damaged. And I say damaged. For example, in Cole County, the county which the capital's in, the public defender came out and said that they were in 24 of the last criminal cases that they represented people in, 62.5 of the people of color were excluded from the jury, kicked off, and didn't have any people of color. I'd be happy to share that information with you. But so not only are we excluded on the front side, get justice in
why
court,
is that?
We can't even go to court and participate in justice. You know,
I can tell you why. I can tell you exactly why. I've sat right there in Independence in the courtroom and was excluded because, and this is, I tell you, the guy was suing his boss for he had hurt himself on the job, and they asked if anybody remaining had any knowledge of anatomy and physiology or any medical knowledge. I said yes, and they excluded me.
Wow. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you.
Hold on. So you were kicked off because you were too smart?
I was an uppity smart nigga, and they wasn't going to have it.
Oh, that's what's going on.
And they really don't have all that to work with because black people really don't like to go to court.
Right.
Even for their civil duties, they don't like to go. And so when they do show up, they get all nervous if you actually can read, and then they get mad if you can't read. And so you damned if you do, and you damned if you don't, and it's a very odd situation.
In the last criminal trial I had, I represented 20. It was a group of 23 preachers that got arrested for preaching. They were singing, chanting Bible verses, singing gospel songs, chanting Bible verses, and praying at the state capitol. So they got arrested for that. The prosecutor wanted them to serve, go to jail. Each of them go to jail for that, unconscionable. But worse than that, there were people that were selected for the jury who, the black ones who just knew of one of the black preachers, just knew that he was a black person that was a preacher in the community, didn't go to their church, didn't have any other relationship to him, versus a young Caucasian lady who was actually the babysitter for one of the attorneys, right? So they let the babysitter stay on. They kicked off the lady that knew of one of the defendants, that's what we're working with. That's what's happening in Missouri right now.
Shenanigans.
It is.
All right, so
it is.
Well, the shenanigans is the next point. And, you know, the shenanigans is the descent from the St. Louis chapter of the NAACP. Now, what in Hades was that all about? Cause, and I want to get this, I want to get this right because, you know, this is one of them situations where I don't want to be misquoted or misquote folks, but they came about to protect their own folk. And I understand that. So their charge was they felt if the ban, the advisory, if you will, not a ban, but the advisory, were to be upheld by the national board of the NAACP, then it should impress the same upon the other 38 states with similar laws because they fear that the advisory is going to hurt their members whom happen to be in this, the hospitality industry. Now, let me remember this because, you know, I've been to St. Louis, I've been to Missouri quite a few times, believe it or not. I have been. And I want to say that I was not amongst the many that came through to visit. Now, if this was New Orleans, I could understand because tourism is like the largest industry they have there. I don't see the correlation between St. Louis and tourism, but maybe I'm missing something because of the arch. I don't know. I do know, however, that amongst all of this, the Urban League had its conference in St. Louis last week, correct?
They did.
Because my son was there. And I'm thinking to myself that they got to be fit to be tied because they got caught up in the midst of all this crap. And I'm not saying crap as far as what you did, sir. I'm talking about what the state did. They got caught up in the midst of all this. You know, the okey-doke was poor. So now we got y'all niggas money. We going to put this out there publicly. Because we already got your money. You can't go nowhere. They got hit with the ultimate okey-doke. You know what I'm saying? Like, where you going to go now? Where you going to go? Where you going to go? You know what I'm saying? I'm shocked that they have not been as forward coming or thinking as you were with your folks to make this a point of this is the line and we feel like you've crossed it. However, I'm not so shocked because, you know, their political interests and there are other interests involved. We won't go into that because that's a different show for a different time. But have you had conversations with the folks in St. Louis, and is there any coming back to the whole on their part back to the state conference?
Yes. And I am happy to report that we've had an opportunity to review the legislation. To look at the situations that are going on here in Missouri, and that there's been a retraction of that statement that was initially issued. And actually, you know, I'll tell you, y'all are the first to know about it. Essentially, they have reviewed the legislation, understand what it would do, feel like Missouri has been sold a bill of goods just as they were. When you have powerful people who we know are intelligent. I mean, you have the Missouri Chamber of Commerce. They've got people with MBAs and that kind of stuff. If you've got the governor who's a Rhodes Scholar, and you have those people telling you things like, oh, well, we're just joining the federal standard. And you're used to having politicians tell some version of the truth or at least accurate facts, then it's easy to come up with a conclusion that might not be exactly right. And so at this point, just like I contend that we were before, we're all on the same page. We don't believe that equality and justice can be sacrificed for any business interest. And we understand that Senate Bill 43 does exactly that. It puts our human dignity in place of smaller issues that need to be concerned. So, yeah.
Two things. First off, we always love breaking news, and I didn't want to yell that as you were talking because I'm respectful. So we will take that very much as a tip in our cap, a feather in our cap, because we just did break some news, you all. Please understand and believe it. So thank you very much. Secondly, out of respect for you and the St. Louis branch, I will keep my personal comments to myself about what I just thought about what you just said in respect to them. But, yeah, I'll let that alone. I'll let that alone.
So what are some of the sites we can go to get the data that you're accessing? Where can I go look to go get, say, how many black people are getting stopped in Missouri? How many cases of a hate crime nature are being legislated at this moment? Things of that nature. Where can I go to get that information?
Well, sure. So I think that, and that's a sad thing. You know, I hate that we are volunteer run. There's a lot of good things about it, but the sad part is that we don't have the ability to compile a resource like that for ourselves when we're looking at that. So I should be able to say to you, sister, go to www.monacp.org, and it will have all the data there. The best that we've been able to do is provide links to most of the data. So, for example, if you want the vehicle stops report, that report and all the 16 years' worth of data is held at the Missouri Attorney General's website. The current Attorney General is Josh Hawley. And so you'd have to look up that website, and you could pull down on a menu, and you can go right to it. And they've got all the data there. Now, in terms of the review of the hate crime information, you have to go to a couple of different places. You can look on the Department of Justice website, and then also on the FBI website was the last place. And so you have to kind of cull that data. The Missouri Prosecutors Association, MOPS as it's called, does not put forth any data like that. And you have a very hard time finding it on a state level, so you have to rely
on
federal government.
It's called Mobsters?
Oh, no, MOPS, M-O-P-S.
Oh, okay.
Right on.
I wonder why it's not readily available.
That's not an altogether bad name. I mean, they be up to some wheeling and dealing, them prosecutors. But they are the ones. But who better to compile data than them? They're the ones who see the ultimate fallout. It should be mandatory.
Right.
It should be mandatory for these people to say, because they're working on the behalf of the state, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That's exactly right. And, you know, and we've tried. We've reached out to them. And to be very honest with you, they may have changed presidents in 2017. But when I tried in 2016, they refused to return a call, you know. And let me say this right, several calls. I don't understand how you can hold public office and refuse to be – it's not necessarily accountable to the public, because at that point, I just wanted some introductions and the ability to – yes.
To be transparent. Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Ooh, I'm so excited. It has been such a fantastic interview. I had begged you for 5. You've given us almost 30. I'm almost giddy like a schoolgirl.
Well, sir, out of respect for your time, we do want to let you go, because we said 30. You've given us 30. We are good. We do appreciate you. We do invite you to chat with us again whenever you feel the need. Please do not hesitate in dropping me a line. I know how to get in touch with you. You know how to get in touch with me. So whatever you need from us, we are more than willing to be there with you and for you. Again, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate your perspective on what's happening, how we need to move forward. And, of course, we appreciate the breaking news that the St. Louis chapter has retracted their statement, countering your statement. So we do appreciate that. Rashi, do you have anything else for the president before we let him go?
I don't know, brother. I just want to champion your work, and I want to tell you your family is so beautiful. Oh, my goodness. Your family I would put that next to Barack, Michelle, and the two girls any day. It is so beautiful, and I can see why you want the state to be right, because I wouldn't let my family like that in a state in this disrepair. I would have to get about the business of getting it right myself as a responsible black man, you know. I just thank you for not being afraid to hear the chatter, because let me let you know, as a person on your calls, the chatter online is very, it's a bit divisive. You either are completely understanding of what you're talking about, or you completely have no idea what you're talking about. And
right.
the hatred that you are receiving from the people who don't understand, it's almost dangerous. It's a dangerous level of hate, in my opinion. So keep that
Thank
beautiful
you.
Family close, keep them close, and just know that we champion this cause. And Baltimore has had 34 hours of
35.
Fire. Nobody. 35 hours of no one killing no one. You hear me?
That is good. Beautiful. That is beautiful.
Yes, sir. Yes,
Boy.
Sir.
That's wonderful.
So that's the breaking news we sharing with you, since you shared with us.
Yes, thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chaplain.
Thank you.
I'm gonna give you the last word, but I want to say this. First off, I didn't meet you when the convention was in here in Baltimore. I regret that because I would have loved to have met you. I stand firm with you, though, and Mr. Johnson, because I think he is youthful enough and engaged enough to not only prove the relevancy of the NAACP, but to make it relevant to young folks. So with you two together, I think that we are off to a great administration under him. And again, I want to lastly thank you for your time. Again, commit ourselves to being there with you and for you whenever you need us. And now I will bow out and let you say whatever you need to say, and we will let you go.
Thank you both. It's been a pleasure and honor to be on your show, and I can't wait to come back. It's through good people like you that the rest of the world is able to get the information, and then they can make a decision. In Missouri, if you live there, if you're thinking about coming here, you just need to be aware of the civil rights violations that have been ongoing and some of those that are yet to come. If you have a claim of discrimination or harassment that you haven't filed, but that you want to, or that's an issue that concerns you, we encourage you, get some help with that. Either do it yourself if you can. If you don't feel up to that, then find somebody else, whether it's a lawyer or a friend or relative or somebody who just knows the process to help you with that. Because after August the 27th, on that next day, on August the 28th, the new law that was signed by Governor Greitens takes effect, and you will lose civil rights that are currently protected in law. So thanks again for having us. I'm coming back to Baltimore. I'll be there in a short while. I'll call you before I come so that we can get together.
Thank you, sir.
And when I'm in Kansas City, sister, I want to come, and if you have a moment for us to chat, I'd love the opportunity.
Man, don't talk
Thank
to me
you,
like that. Don't give me feeling important, man. That's the worst thing ever. Lee, tell the man how dangerous it is.
Hey, look. All right. I lied. I have one last stab because of what you just said. So please understand that you have no recourse through the federal government. Please understand that. You have to fight this fight at home because the federal government will give you no assistance. They are not interested in you and your problems. They're not. They have enough freaking problems of their own, and they can't get their house right. So they dang sure ain't going to turn around and help you get your house right. That's it. That's all. Thank you, sir.
Right. Hey, thank you both. Talk to you soon.
Peace.
Thank you. Bye.
Girl?
All right.
Woman?
All right. We're getting the
That's
tea.
What we do.
We got the tea.
That's what we do.
We got
that
tea.
Is what we do. Now, family, the mooch has left the building. Last week, who was out last week? It was Rance, right? It was Bye-Bye Rance last week. The week before that, it was Bye-Bye Spicy. Now the mooch is out the building. Like, is anybody left in the White House? Kelly's come in. General Kelly's come in, and he's laying down the law as to who is and who ain't staying. There's some folks that are shivering in their boots like the grass blowing in the wind right now. They just don't know what the hell is going to happen next. Or who's going to fly out next? I think there'll be another shake probably by Wednesday of this week. I'm still counting Steve Bannon out. I don't think he's going to last the test of time, to be honest with you. And the only reason the son-in-law is still in there is because he is the son-in-law. Like, the only reason that dude is still there is because he's Trump's son-in-law. Now, Trump is on vacation. Congress ruled before they left for recess to put in place measures to prevent Trump from firing Sessions. And I'm sorry, that's not true. From firing Mueller. They didn't protect Sessions. They protected the special counsel. They like, yeah, you can go, dog, but no, he's staying. He's staying. So,
let me tell you my prediction.
Mm-hmm.
My prediction is Tom Price about to get the hell on.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Because of the failure of the healthcare bill.
See, if you can't come through like Francis Underwood have his people do on House of Cards, then you're ineffective. You can't get my initiatives passed.
Very good point.
If you can't rally the troops, then you have no standing. You don't have enough power among your peers, which means that he's gonna have to find somebody like maybe put Kathleen Sebelius back in there. She was fairly respected, or I don't know. But I want to talk about my new homegirl, and I know she's a disrespectful little homegirl, but she's my new homie. And that's Huckabee Sanders. I think
that's your friend.
Let me tell you why.
That is your friend.
We about to break revolutionary ground. I did my research. There's only been three women standing in front of that podium. One of them was Dee Dee Myers, and she's a very small white lady, and the other one looked like a Barbie. She looked like an actual Barbie. And now we about to get a woman in there who, she's no Barbie. She's no small little diminutive woman that, you know, with that's a real buxom Nebraskan woman, you know. Like raised off corn and buckeye peas. So now we don't have to listen to our pretty blonde friend tell us what happened. We can totally listen to a grown woman, adult, tell us the lies that the rest of those dudes used to have to stand there and tell.
And you're happy about that.
This is as close as we gonna get to Hillary Clinton sitting in that chair.
We're dealing
with a woman that we're going to have to listen to tell lies, and she's not very attractive.
Okay.
So I think this is a big moment for women's movements and women's rights. I don't have to be pretty to do my job. And I don't have to be attractive for you to respect me enough to listen. Now, I will say her newfound power has almost made me want to hurt her. She's talking crazy to April Flowers like she just got a shot or something, a testosterone. I don't know what her problem was. But
April Ryan.
I know a lady named April Flowers who just talked to me. I'm sorry. April Ryan. But the point is, she's not attractive, but she is intelligent. And she can do the job, and they're about to have to sit there and take that. They won't be able to shuffle her. And I like that. I like that. She's my new. I don't really want to like you, but I have to.
I got you. I want to talk about something that we've both battled with, and that is engaging the transgender community. So we've been reaching to get someone in the transgender community, preferably a veteran or someone who's still serving, to come on the show to talk about issues surrounding the transgender. Not so successful, right? Now, I don't know what the motivation for that is. But please understand something. If you are, or you know someone that is, they are in a safe place here. We are foolish, yes. Well, we're not foolish. I'm the foolish one. Rashi's always the, you shouldn't say that. She's that one. She's always the damn proper one. Whatever. So I'm going to have the fun and the fool. she's going to deliver the seriousness. I know when to, as they used to say, shut the hell up and let her talk. So if it's one of those cases where I need to just shut the hell up and let her talk, I'll let her run it. It's no biggie. Doesn't bother me at all. However, we are looking desperately to have this conversation because it's a conversation that needs to be had. Everything that we've both seen, we've been sharing with one another, leads us back to the same trail. And that trail is to the transgender community because there's a lot of things going on that involve them, and we want to get their take on it. So please, if you know anybody, some call us. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. However they need to reach us, they can reach us. It's we're easy to get to. We're not hiding. We're not hiding at all. We just want to have a conversation, an open, honest conversation. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. All right? Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
all right.
There's no better way to end than on that note. I want to thank the Baltimore Ceasefire Movement, the citizens of Baltimore, the president of the Missouri chapter of the NAACP, Chapel, Rashi, I want to thank you and all your hard work and your efforts.
Thank you,
all of those who tuned in today, be it live or later, we thank you again for constantly supporting us. We wish you all a great and glorious weekend. You all be safe. You all be good. We will see you next week on the radio. Rashi's been working really hard about this whole chemical, what to use, what not to use thing. I got some other stuff to throw into that as well. Lotions, your soaps, your toothpaste.
What the actual subject is about is colonial mentality and behaviors that we are engaging in, things we are buying, things we are doing that we only do because we see the people who are in charge are doing it. And so I would really like, we're going to be, you know, I'm going to do my best to make sure I can bring an outside source, but I've been doing quite a bit of work to address why isn't it working? It's not working because it ain't us.
You can't
just do what other people doing. Yeah. So thank you. I want to tell you one thing before you go. That transgender thing you're talking about flushing these issues out, we can't move forward without protecting the most endangered among us. If we just let the smallest subgroup of us go by the wayside, the next subgroup is next, and then eventually we have let all that is us be destroyed. If we can protect from little bitty newborn babies all the way to full-grown transgendered men, you know, then we've captured everyone, and then progress can be made. If we leave anyone behind, it won't work. And so that's what I want. I want it to be known. It's not because we want to sensationalize this new, we care about the transgender phenomenon. We actually want to bring these people into the fold of understanding and let those out there who would even fathom killing someone because they find them attractive and they're not of the opposite sex, we want those people to know it won't be tolerated. It won't be let go. And even a straight man will tell another straight man, man, leave that person alone. Until we get there, we have work to do, Lee. And I don't want it to be, you know, shoddy work. I want us to do really good work on that.
There you go. Absolutely. Now, the agreement is two things. First off, as long as she doesn't talk about, with respect to the colonialism and the buying things, as long as she doesn't talk about hats, suits, and shoes, it's all good. And then with respect to the transgender community, as long as she doesn't try to not respect the fact that I'm a lesbian and I've been born a lesbian since day one, then everything is cool. All right, we'll see you all next week. Until then, peace.